Hello and welcome back to the Roswell Podcast. Today I'm joined by two of my closest friends, Mr. Luke Dalmido and David Wee. Luke, you will remember from the last Quintet Rundown Podcast. David is my cornerman, has been my cornerman for the last two quintets. And today we're just going to be chatting about Quintet and Vegas and all of the stuff that went on there. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Check it out. Okay, today we have Luke. Luke, how you doing?
Luke, is that my name?
Luke Dalmido, how you doing?
Yeah, feeling good.
Tell me, since the last time you were on the Roswell Podcast, this is your second time, how has your life changed since that first time I gave you that opportunity?
Well, my Instagram followers went up from 417 to 420.
Wow, that's
so had crazy. Quite a good influx.
That's quite a big percentage considering. Relatively.
Yeah, well, I think the fact that you slated me at the beginning of the podcast.
People actually liked it. That's why I got you back, because I never planned to have you in the first place.
Well, I think they're starting to see the real you now. Like, the fact that you are quite horrible to a lot of people.
That's not true.
Actually, I want to hear more about that.
That's not true at all. I can mute that mic very quickly. What is your Instagram is at PigeonPeckerMMA.
PigeonPeckerMMA, the name that you gave me.
Let's get those Instagram followers up to 425, shall we?
Hit the big time.
Also, joining me is David Wee.
Hello.
How you doing? And as we go there.
Hello.
At David Wee BJJ. Yeah. David is my loyal cornerman who has been with me for the previous two quintets.
During which he is undefeated.
Undefeated at quintet. Undefeated with David in my corner.
Hang on a minute. He's your, what did you say?
He's my cornerman.
No, what did you said it in a nice way.
What did I say? I don't know.
I got, last time, I
illustrious.
Got, Luke is a nobody, he is nothing, he is not important, and you got something really nice.
Well you don't bullshit. Have three appearances on Fight Pass, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
If you came out to Vegas to me, then you could have been my loyal cornerman.
I'm a school teacher, we don't earn that much money.
Well, you know, go to Vegas, you can lose even more. So, yeah man, let's talk about Quintet. How did we start this last time? Can I grab some of your water?
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, how was Vegas?
Vegas is crazy.
In general.
Vegas is crazy. You've been a few times, haven't you?
I've been four times, and I'm going to go a fifth time next August for my brother's 30th.
Yeah, Vegas is insane. It's just a ludicrous place. What do you think about it? I guess your view of Vegas is probably a little bit different from ours, because you're an absolute degenerate.
Yep, there it is. Well, I mean, we go to party, and I only go for 5 days. And when I first thought, well, I have to do that long flight for just 5 days.
That's plenty. We did 3 days after the fights. And
it feels so long when you're out there.
Yeah.
Because the amount of sleep that you have, like 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
The days are so long. The hangovers are so long. The partying is longer. It's just...
Do you know what the thing is with Vegas? It seems to me it's like, it's not like anywhere else I've been. It's absolutely relentless. Like, you can't defeat it.
No.
It's not like any other city because it's 24 hours.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we'll have a quiet night. We were having a quiet night and we get back at 4 a.m. because you have no idea what time it is.
Because those casinos are just pumped full of oxygen.
The casinos are open. The lights are on. You have no idea what the time is. And there's people in there the entire time.
And there's also people in there at different time zones. There are people going out on ready to party. People coming in from a party. People going out for lunch. People coming back from dinner. So all at different times.
There's literally no way to beat Vegas. Like, I think with a lot of other places, you know, even something like we went to Ibiza. Yeah, you can stay up till 7 a.m. and like you've done it. You've stayed open as long as all the clubs are open. But in Vegas, it never ever stops.
No. And that's the thing. If you're bored, like it could be like 9 a.m. If you're bored in bed, like you don't wait for your mates to come. You just go downstairs and something will be happening.
Yeah.
Like something will be going on. Something crazy.
Means craps.
Yeah, craps. Do you gamble much when you're out there?
A little bit.
I think it's impossible not to in Vegas, isn't it?
But those craps table, I mean, the amount of... crazy people that you get coming up to those tables. It's just like, I think I was hungover once at a craps table and a guy just comes over just like really hyped up and he's like, blow on this, like on the dice. And I'm just like hungover, like, okay. There you go. And he like gets a 2 and a 3. 23, that's Michael Jordan. Like, yeah, that's the number that he wore at the Chicago Bulls.
I was like, where are we going with this? Crazy place. But Quintet was crazy as well, man.
What was the vibe like compared to Japan?
It was very different. I think everyone feels a lot more
A lot of people knew what they were like, what was going to happen a bit more.
Everyone kind of knew what was going on. That was the thing about the first quintet, is that it was going to be a complete mystery. No one had a clue what was going to happen. Mm. You still don't know really what's going to happen, because that's just the name of the game with that format. But you at least knew kind of what was going to happen, because they'd already had a few events. It was definitely different because we were in a country that it was very easy to understand. It wasn't like, they put music on it there. Now we're going to get hot. Sorry, what was I saying?
Yeah, it's a country where everything was easy to understand.
It was easy to understand. You know, a lot of people had been there before.
There was no raw chicken sushi.
Everyone spoke the language. It was just like a...
Except the refs.
Except the refs didn't speak the language, yeah. But we'll get onto that in a little bit.
What was the size of the arena like? Was it... It was in the New Orleans.
It was in the Orleans, yeah. Which is the, so everyone was staying in the same hotel, and it was in the hotel that the... fight was in, so there wasn't as much traveling. Like, we didn't really leave the hotel for the first 4 days. Like, all of the press was there. The weigh-ins were there, the press was there, the photos were there in the hotel rooms, and we went to the arena to do stuff. So there wasn't that moving around Tokyo like we had last time,
right?
In quintet, we were like driving to the middle of nowhere and going to in the original one, we went to like a nightclub, which is where the press conference is. We ended up not doing the press conference because they booked it on the same day as the Conor McGregor press conference. Like, there will be literally no press there. They're all going to be at the UFC event. So we ended up just sending Craig Jones. We just, like, every fighter sent one person to go and do, like, a few little things for the camera.
Oh, well, was that to do with the rundown of each person in their team?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what they did there.
That was quite good, though, because there were some grapplers that I didn't know on teams, and just to get a little bit of background information was quite good.
Yeah, it was a nice touch. I don't think they had that last time, did they? Yeah, that was nice.
Was the because on TV the arena looked pretty decent. Was it better than Japan's or
no. Oh fuck no,
was it not?
No.
Oh,
the screen was really cool.
Yeah,
was there a screen in Japan?
The screen behind the mat.
There wasn't a screen at all in Japan.
No, in Japan it was
a massive circle.
Yeah.
So that was the big thing. Like, they used half of the arena, so they had that back wall where they had this huge screen, which was very cool. But the whole arena was quite small compared to in Japan. It was fucking enormous.
Really?
Yeah, Japan, the arena, this massive sumo arena, it was epic. There's no other word for me to describe. The ceiling was super high, it went super far back, and it was filled with people.
The seating was cool.
You're just sitting on the floor on pillows. Seating. With this one, it felt a lot smaller, and it was a lot smaller. There was a lot less people there. The people that were there made a good amount of noise, but it was pretty empty.
You would have thought the day before the McGregor fight that a lot of guys would have come over night before.
I don't think that their
PR
is very good. Because look, I was saying, I had this idea, which was, we're in Vegas the day before the Conor McGregor fight, biggest MMA fight in history, in Vegas, and we have a grappling event with multiple UFC Hall of Famers, multiple UFC former champions. It should be full.
Yeah.
And they're marketing, doing these press snippets and sending it to different media companies, and it's only being covered by a few that are interested in grappling. We should have had all of the fighters go down to the strip in their rash guards, handing out leaflets, talking to people. Imagine that. Imagine you're in town for the UFC, and Uriah Faber, Sakuraba, Frank Mir, yeah, Josh Barnett, Gordon Ryan, Craig Jones are hanging around on the street, basically dressed like superheroes, which is what no-gi uniforms are, giving out leaflets, telling them to come. There's this crazy event. We're all going to be fighting in teams. It's tomorrow. It's before the UFC. Head on down and check it out. Imagine how many tickets we
would have sold. At the same time, how many people are there for that UFC event? And maybe, let's say, 20% of them are like proper MMA fans.
I don't think they even knew that it was there. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
But you should.
There's at least 20,000 there for the UFC, because that's the arena size, plus all the viewings.
I would have personally thought like proper MMA fans would have known it was on. And if they went to Vegas, they would have known.
I don't know. Well, evidently they didn't. And I just think that would have been the best utilization of where we were and when it was.
Yeah, it's kind of you would have thought it's perfect.
To get out on the street there and start interacting with people. Because we went down the strip and there's like, obviously loads of people around trying to sell stuff, trying to get you to come to clubs. We're thinking,
Fuck. Yeah. Just imagine 128 kilos of Frank Mir standing there. He's going to sell loads of things to loads of people.
You know, it would have made a big buzz on the streets, and I think we would have sold a couple of hundred tickets at least. So, but what do I know?
Could have heard 500, you know, Irish mob in
drunk
there.
Irish people. That's what we need. We need to put Dylan Danis on the card.
You needed some more shouty Polaris guy there.
Oh, mate, tell me about it. He would have fit right in Vegas.
We went to his wedding recently. We can see where he gets the shouty Polaris vibe from.
Yeah. but yeah, the lineup for Quintet was crazy. Like being in a room with all of the people that were there. Like we went to the to the rules meeting. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. You're like, firstly, like Yuki Nakai is the head referee, who's like, for those who know, is absolute legend. Obviously Sakuraba's there talking as well. Josh Barnett, like former UFC heavyweight champion Josh Barnett, former UFC heavyweight champion Frank Mir. Gold medalist judo Olympian Satoshi Ishii.
Were you starstruck by like Frank Mir? I guess Frank Mir would probably be, because also
starstruck
giant.
By me. I starstruck? No, it was one of those things where you're in such a crazy environment that you just, these people just come up to you and it's just kind of normal. Like
there's about 20 people in that room who, if they're not in the room with the other 19, own every room they walk into.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like I was walking through the hotel at one point and I was on the phone and like Sakuraba came up and tickled me. Like it's just I'm like on the phone, I'm like, I like giggled and they're like, I just like, oh, Sakuraba, like UFC Hall of Fame, Sakuraba just tickled me whilst I was walking through.
You know,
and then you just get on with the rest of your day. So it's a very strange place to be with all those people around you. You're saying hello to them. Eddie Bravo's bowling around and the Martinez brothers and Craig Jones Gordon, like the Ryan brothers, Gary Tonnen's hanging around there.
Was there anyone in particular that you may not have met properly before that you got on with?
I don't know. We kind of hung out with
Barnett's them. Very cool, but that was more like from
we chatted to Barnett
winter.
More. He's coming.
You
to
met him in Japan, though, didn't you?
Yeah. He's warming to me. I think hopefully he's in the UK for a little bit. He's competing in like a catch wrestling show in a few weeks' time.
And oh, really?
I'm up in Liverpool for seminars. I'm going to go.
What like a pro wrestling catch wrestling?
I don't know what he's doing, but
submission
it seems
grappling.
Something that he shouldn't be in the UK to do some little catch wrestling thing. But
in Bolton,
yeah, but who knows. I'll check it out. Stay tuned.
Fair dues. Mm. Well, do you speak to Gordon Ryan?
I know you guys
guys had a little bit of online.
I didn't talk.
I
want
to say online beef.
I didn't talk to him much. The most I spoke to him was during my fight, actually, didn't he?
Yeah.
He gave me shit for jumping close guard when I never jumped close guard.
Oh really?
He said something, and I shouted back at him because he kept on saying like, "Oh ref, get it," with his super whiny voice, and I shouted something back at him.
Best grappler in the world should know what a close guard looks like.
Yeah, come on, Gordon, sort it out. I didn't talk to him too much. Spoke to his brother.
Nicky, cool dude.
Cool dude, yeah. Very I like cool him.
Poor guy in Vegas, can't drink.
Yeah, man.
Can't gamble
four
either.
More years. Bless him. Yeah, can't gamble. Bless him. Yeah, he's just
well, saving loads of money.
The good news is that he wouldn't have felt as bad as we did the few days afterwards. So yeah, it swings and roundabouts, really.
Yeah, what was that? What was that drink that you had? Or was it 14% you put on your story?
Oh, Four Loko.
Four Loko.
Yeah,
you do that. You're so weird with drinking alcohol. Why? A normal person just drinks a beer, maybe a spirit with a. Like,
why would you drink a beer when you can drink four Locos at once?
We were in Ibiza, and he was like, "You know what? I'm going to get drunk tonight," and he decides to buy from the shop this like.
Oh, it's Buckfast.
Coffee, red wine
mixture.
No, it was
Buckfast.
Was it Buckfast?
It was Buckfast.
No, it wasn't. It was something else in a can.
It was Buckfast.
Do you know what was the best drink?
It was 100% Buckfast. It was a bottle. I bought a bottle of Buckfast.
What's wrong with a good old-fashioned beer?
Mate, what's wrong with a good old-fashioned bottle of Buckfast?
The best drink we had, though, was on at the pub on the fight night.
Oh, yeah.
This like marshmallow-flavoured stout.
Yeah, that was really good.
Gorgeous.
See, that's just so unnecessary.
It's not unnecessary. Mate, live a little bit. What do? Have a fucking Stella.
Yeah.
That's all you do. Jesus Christ, mate. Get out of your comfort zone.
It's an excellent beer.
Drink some mead that you brew yourself for 2 years
out of a
fucking drinking horn.
You know, I once went through a tough time. I once had a bad time with some stomach problems.
Yeah.
And I still drank Stella and it stayed true to me and it helped me during my healing process. And now I'm feeling good as gold.
So, Four Loko would have killed any stomach problems that you had.
Yeah. So, apparently, originally Four Loko had a shitload of caffeine in, and it killed some people. So they had to take the caffeine out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it probably takes out all the illness and all the white blood cells.
Yeah, probably. What's that?
It was marketed as an energy drink. Just happened to have
14%
alcohol, stronger than wine.
It happened to have 5 units of alcohol in. How did we get onto booze? Oh, we're talking about Nicky Ryan not being able to drink.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a crazy place, man. Frank Mir is absolutely huge. He weighed in at 280 pounds.
Has he retired from MMA now, Frank Mir?
I don't know, but he doesn't look. He's not in good shape.
No.
Nah, he was. He like wasn't walking very well. Mm. He like looked in a pretty bad way. Physically,
he's been through a lot.
He's been through a lot. His last fight was against Fedor, right? He got KO'd.
Was it Fedor? I can't remember. I think it would have been a while ago.
Bellator.
He's a big man, though. Obviously, you see him fight people like Brock Lesnar and that. He doesn't look as big as he's huge.
Not many people make Satoshi Ishii look small.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. And he did.
And Satoshi Ishii is just like a Olympic man gold winning fridge.
Yeah. He's like a actual square. Yeah, he's ridiculous. Very, very cool guy, though. We got some training in with him. We went and did a training session a few days before the event. And Satoshi jumped in with us, had a role with him.
What was it like, those pre-event roles? Are they just super light, or do people get a little bit competitive?
I was ill for the whole week that I was out there. I was ill for a couple of days before I left, and I was very sick for the first couple of days that I got there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had a shitty cold. I was fucked. So I rolled, and I didn't roll with many guys because they stayed away from it. I didn't want to make them ill before. So I did roll with Ishii, though. I rolled with Ishii, I rolled with Marcin, brought his mate out, I rolled with him and Matt Benyon. Yeah. So I tried to stay away from the guys. So unfortunately, yet again, I've not managed to roll with. Everyone keeps asking me, have I rolled with Craig Jones?
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah. Once again, it eludes me.
Especially as Craig Jones seemed to roll with everyone.
Craig Jones is a rat. I now know why everyone says fuck Craig Jones, because he's a disloyal bastard.
Snake.
He was training with the Alpha Male guys the day before the fight.
Yeah. Well, he trains with Gordon Ryan. He goes to Henzo's.
Yeah, I know, but he was fucking fighting him the next day, for fuck's sake. Come on. Where's the team?
I can't remember who it was.
You're not a team, though.
Yeah, he's only proven what the critics say, which is that we're not a real team.
But yeah, well, that was the whole thing about the show, wasn't it? That 10th Planet was the only proper team on the tournament.
So I'll tell you why this pisses me off. Because that was never the point of the fucking show. The first show was Polaris team, which is a team comprising of people who had fought at Polaris. A Sambo team, a team of Sambo people. A Judo team, a dream team of Judo guys. And Sakuraba's dream team, which is Sakuraba and his mates. The premise was never that it was going to be actual teams or affiliations competing with each other. Then they pulled the 10th Planet guys in because it's another cool team to make, and then suddenly, oh, we're the only real team. Yeah, but that was never the name of the game.
Yeah, now, but then I can get where they're coming from.
But then
Gordon going with Alpha Male, that...
Well, Gordon going with Alpha Male just literally has no connection to Alpha Male whatsoever, so...
Exactly. At least everyone on Polaris has fought on Polaris.
Yeah, that was probably the strangest one.
Like, just call it Uriah Faber's dream team.
Was he in it originally?
No.
Or was he a late replacement?
Someone got injured.
That's quite a super sub, isn't it?
We tried to Uriah after, and he did not have a fucking clue who Gordon Ryan was. Someone, I think it was Dustin, said, like, I've got this guy, Gordon, like, get him on the team. And he was like, I don't know who that is. And we've already filled the spot. We've already filled the spot. And then that guy got injured, and they pulled Gordon Ryan in.
Uriah Faber didn't know who he was.
Didn't have a Scooby-Doo who
Bullshit.
He was. No. Do you know who else didn't know who
he was? What, anyone? just call him like Big Blonde Matey?
No, he didn't know. He knew who he was afterwards, but he didn't know who he was before he came on the team. Another person who doesn't know who anyone is, Marcin Held, who's hilarious the entire time.
Really?
Yeah. So he tapped Gio Martinez. Didn't have a fucking clue who he was. We're all freaking out afterwards. Like the next day, we're freaking out. Like, oh my God, I still can't believe you tapped Gio Martinez. He's like, who is Gio?
Before the fight as well, Craig was like, yeah, just, you know, give him a hard time.
Yeah, we were just like...
I give him a hard time with his knee.
Did he say that? No, but he did that. Yeah, we that was the craziest shock of the whole show, was that Marcin goes out and kneebars fucking Gio Martinez in, what, 30 seconds?
It was very, very cool.
It was insane.
He's one of those competitors that just... I mean, I don't know what he's like in the training room, and nor do you, because you don't roll with anyone. but he steps up in competition time, doesn't he?
Well, you know what? He had a really hard time at the Kasai a few months ago, so it was very cool for him to come out. And yeah, he like absolutely took it to everyone at the first quintet. He was a complete dark horse and came out and smashed it, and then he managed to do the exact same thing. Coming out and, you know, the plan was basically for Marcin to take Gio to a draw or wear him out. That was the plan, was for him to tire Gio out so someone else could submit him. So for him to go out, that was never on the cards. Fair play to
him. He had a weight advantage over Gio.
Gio weighed in very light.
Gio was the lightest there.
Gio was like 65 kilos maybe.
Was that still an 8 minute match or a four?
It was still an 8 minute match. Marcin's only 80 kilos.
Right. And then second, was it?
That was the second guy on. Our first guy was Vitor Shaolin.
Yes.
No, Vitor was Gregor. First. Vitor Gregor, then Marcin. Yeah. So if we talk about the event, Vitor was the only guy who replaced someone. He was the new person to the team, and he was a good addition, man.
And who did he replaced? Colin.
Yeah. So he was a good addition. It was a shame, you know. He got submitted by PJ, who was probably one of their top guys. PJ is very good. PJ Barker is very good. He got submitted with him with 30 seconds left. Real shame. Yeah,
that was pretty cool. The match was very back and forth, and to get that submission,
It was a very good match. That whole round was insane.
Yeah.
It was absolutely ludicrous.
But I think it was that ludicrous because this time in particular, they were super harsh on warnings. Some of it was bullshit, complete bullshit. Ryan got a warning for being in Mount.
They got stood back up.
And he was actually going for a head and arm. It
was absolutely ridiculous. And we spoke to them, and something needs to be done because it was too much. Mm-hmm. Like they said in the rules meeting, they said the one thing we're going to change is the Shidos. And they literally said verbatim, it was, you will be shot. No, they will come surprisingly fast. Mm. Right? Surprisingly. And we're thinking that's a freight. You know, that's what they're just saying there. They really came surprisingly fast. They were ridiculous. It really seemed like there were two side referees with crippling ADHD who were basically, as soon as they got bored, sticking flags up. And it was happening almost instantaneously. And I totally understand. So if you look at some like when the big guy...
Antoine
fought Craig Jones and he was backing away.
Mm.
Perfect. Fine, cool. No problem. But they were telling people to attack when they had their back taken and were being choked.
Mm.
And they were telling the person going for a choke also to attack.
They told someone in an armbar to attack. How can you attack in an attack? You know? You would literally, to attack again, you would have to have released an attack in order to attack.
Yeah. So some of it was pretty bad.
Some of the positions were just ridiculous. And you know, to take mount on someone, there just needs to be a better understanding of what's going on, I think.
They must know their jiu-jitsu. Like, he's mounted him and he has him in an arm triangle. It didn't work. He's going to go for something else.
Yeah.
But it was silly. At the same time, I did like... I mean, it made some of the rounds a lot better because they were so...
It made people very nervous. The competitors. None of the competitors were happy with the Shido rules. The real thing was, like, but it made people nervous that they never stopped moving.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes it good, but at the same time, I do think, like, it became a joke in the audience as well. Like, people were shouting out Shido, like, give the ref a Shido and stuff like that during the matches. And it was ironic because the Shido rule has been brought in to try and create a more exciting event for the spectators. But the spectators were booing the Shidos when they were a little bit ridiculous. So I think they went a little bit too far. I don't have any problem with legitimate stalling being given warnings very quickly, but you can't warn people from super dominant positions. It's the equivalent of standing someone up in MMA when they're in mount and they're punching the person in the face.
It has happened.
You just can't do it. Mm. It's ridiculous. So in my opinion, the Shido rule needs to be fixed. But very, very exciting matches. I think that you know, in my opinion, I was kind of back and forth in that first round as a spec because I didn't think I was going to compete first round.
The order again. I know we've spoken about
order,
this on the
last
one.
The order was Vitor Shaolin, Gregor.
Why?
Why did we put Vitor first? I think he just wanted to go first.
Yeah.
The plan was always to have me as the backstop. Craig was going to go later on because we thought we could. We were expecting them to put their two big guys at the back. Basically, we expected them to have a pretty similar lineup than what they've had in previous events. So PJ first. We're just thinking
because that selection is so important.
You can be, but you can
really
know,
mess it up.
You never know what they're going to do. It's so difficult. There are infinite almost variations of what can happen in a quintet event. That's what makes it so exciting. So yeah, you can put a particular lineup, but then one difference in what the opponent does completely changes everything, and then that's going to affect everything that happens in the second round as well. But yeah, we had Vitor in first. We put Gregor in second because we wanted him to have matches, because he didn't get to have matches last time.
Sure.
Martin was in third, and then Craig and then me. I wasn't expecting to have a match. We were expecting pretty much for Victor to win or draw,
yeah,
to Martin hopefully to draw. No, sorry, Gregor to win and draw. Martin the draw. Basically, we kind of worked it out. If Gregor, Craig took out two people, then we'll be all clear, and I wouldn't have to compete go straight into the second round. And then PJ catches Vitor. Like, oh, that kind of changed everything. So as soon as that happened, I start warming up.
By warming up, you mean just like roll the shoulders?
I roll the shoulders, bitch. I start rolling the shoulders. So
we actually did some pummeling too.
We did some pummeling. Yeah, we started pummeling. Yeah,
a good 20 seconds of pummeling.
Bro, it works, okay? Don't worry about
you
it.
You do have these legendary short warm-ups here.
They're getting better. It's all right.
Okay.
I did a couple of sprints beforehand.
You don't run?
Oh, au contraire.
Because you told me when I said that I run, you go, I don't run from a battle, so I don't need to run.
I ran to a battle, mate. I ran to a battle.
Fair enough.
They were very short sprints. I'm talking like 3 or 4 meters.
Right. Up and down the mat.
Yeah. Just in the corridor before we went out. And I'm not even joking. So yeah, I start warming up. And then Gregor goes out, taps PJ quite quickly. Then fights Amir. Taps Amir, we're like, oh shit, and then I sit down again. I don't think I'm gonna fight now.
As I said earlier, like, I am glad that Gregor finally, because Quintet, Josh
Barnett, he took a hit.
Polaris, it didn't work out for him, and he finally got to actually show that he's
I was very happy for him. Gregor for me was the man of the match for our team,
really.
Yeah, I think
of so. Craig,
fuck Craig Jones.
Mate, come on, that De La Hiva footlock, it was unbelievable.
It was good. So about that, like, Craig said beforehand, he was looking at videos, he saw another video of Boogeyman getting straight ankle locked, and he was like, he taps to a straight ankle, like, quite quick.
Yeah.
He literally called it. It was the same as in Japan, he called it. He was like, I'm going to straight ankle lock him, and that's exactly what he went for.
So that's when we were warming up, because we thought Dan was going to fight, and then we remembered Craig had made a call.
Yeah.
And
But did you see the picture of Boogie's Dan's foot?
Yeah, oh, he was limping afterwards.
Oh my god.
Yeah, he let that go for way too long.
I don't understand that part with grappling, especially at ADCC with the heel hooks. Like, that's your leg. You have to walk on that.
Yeah.
Like, why are you letting it go that much? It's done. It's over.
I think with a straight foot lock, it's one of those moves you don't want to tap to, isn't it?
Is it actually viewed as one of them?
I think so.
Right, I see.
It's almost a bit embarrassing.
Okay.
But and to be caught that fast, so
He likes to try and go plot at people, so maybe that's a bit of karma.
that's true. But yeah, so then once Gregor took out two people, and then I sat back down and I was like, okay, I'm probably not going to have to compete this round.
After all that warming up, fuck.
After all that warming up, after that 20 seconds of pummeling, what a waste of time. and then came out for the second round. We kind of clocked that they were going to send out. It was between Manch and Dustin. We had all of the weights written down, so we knew how much everyone weighed. Dustin was one of the only people in the tournament who would have done 4 minutes with me. So I was 20.
So you're going into the final now?
Going into final, yeah. So I was 20.2 kilos heavier than him. So we're talking.
What was your weigh in?
92.2. So had I been 300 grams under, it would have been an 8 minute match.
Did that even cross your mind to just be as light as you could?
It can't cross your mind because you don't know what they're going to weigh. Dustin apparently cut 15 pounds to get to that division.
Oh, really?
So had he cut.
He cut?
Yeah, the whole team, I think they said they cut
Alpha
50
cut
pounds.
A lot.
Little wrestlers, that's what they do.
They cut 50 pounds so to make the weight. So had Dustin cut a few kilos more than he had to.
Right.
Had he not done that,
it would have been an 8-minute match. Could have been completely different.
Well, because they also had Gordon and they had that giant wrestler.
I don't think the giant cut, but Gordon cut about 5 kilos as well, I think.
Yeah. Cuts 5 kilos?
Yeah, five, ten kilos.
Is it day before weigh-in?
Day before weigh-in.
Yeah. Still, though.
Yeah, man, it's America wrestlers, though. That's what they do, isn't it?
Fair dues.
But I think Craig and Gregor both tried to cut some weight so no one would get 4 minutes with them.
Because you don't have a truly big guy on your team, do you?
Well, apart from me, obviously.
You're called the big guy, aren't you?
Yeah, no, you're right. We don't have a big guy. I said to him, I'm going to come in 100 kilos next time.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to try to.
That's so unnecessary.
It's not.
You've never hit three figures. You've attempted.
I've got close.
You've got close.
99.6.
Until you're like waking up wanting to throw up every morning. And
mate, sometimes sacrifices need to be made for glorious things.
Even I will if it's not, your if you, digestive system.
If you truly think that I will go to my grave not having hit the elusive 100 kilos, then you've never met me.
Maybe wait till you're 50 though to hit the 100 kilo, because it might just happen naturally.
Nah, fuck that. Fuck that. The next time I step in the quintet, I'm planning to do under 100 for ADCC anyway. My plan is to go to 105 kilos and cut.
That is, that's ridiculous.
I don't think I can do it though.
Don't?
Not
yet. The fact that you're not sure if you can do it means that you probably shouldn't.
I can definitely get to 100 though.
This is your body though. This isn't like a... Yeah.
Bro, when I was 75 kilos, people told me not to go up to 80.
That seemed to work out all right.
Yeah, exactly. So save your breath. It's like, imagine if that was legit. When I was 75 kilos, I said, I'm going to go up to 80 kilos. And people told me, don't do it. Imagine now if I told you I was going to cut to 80 kilos.
You would have done well at that lightweight.
Probably better.
I'm glad you agree. But you also like being known as the big strong guy.
Yeah. Because like, I don't understand why people would try and be light. It doesn't make actual sense to me.
Really?
Why would you want to walk around the earth being a small person?
It's good for your joints.
McGregor seems to be doing all right.
Oh, fuck McGregor. He just got fucked up by a giant giant
155er.
Yeah, but he cuts a lot of weight.
And wrestles bears.
That fucking bear ain't cutting
weight.
Talking
of bears, are you pretty pissed that Misha didn't carry on the theme of you being a teddy?
She said I was incredibly strong, I believe.
Did she really?
I think so.
Not a cute bear, though.
Not a cute bear, yeah. I was a little bit disappointed. Yeah. I was a little bit disappointed.
How did you think? I thought she was... I mean, I've heard mixed reviews about her commentary. I thought she was all
right. I have heard not mixed reviews.
Did you hear mainly negative?
Mainly negative. I haven't watched it back, so...
I thought the duo, because the other commentator was quite intense.
Yeah.
Which I thought was good. She and was then she chill. Kind of brought a calmness to it.
The problem was is that she is an... It makes sense to get in a name. I think professional grappling has this habit. They're stuck on this thing where they want to have UFC fighters involved in their shows. They're obsessed with it. All professional grappling events fall into this. They all want to get UFC people on because they think there's going to be this big crossover from casual MMA fans into professional grappling fans. Personally, I just don't really believe that there's that much that it's going to have that much of an effect that you're going to get all of these casual MMA fans coming over to watch Quintet just because Misha's doing the commentary or just because Uriah Faber's on the, you know, I don't know. They're always trying to put UFC fighters, you know, we saw like Phil Harris versus Brad Pickett in Polaris on the main event to try and get those people over. How many people are going, I'm going to watch that because of that? I don't really know, but I'm not so sure about it. So I understand what they're trying to do, but the problem is Quintet is almost exclusively, even if you get some of that crossover from MMA, almost exclusively going to be watched by
jiu-jitsu fans.
Hardcore jiu-jitsu fans. When the commentator is significantly less knowledgeable about the sport and the athletes than the casual person watching, you've got a little bit of a problem. You're going to have a lot of frustrated people.
She hadn't really done her research.
She hadn't really done the research. And either you've got to know the game, which is why someone like a Josh Palmer, for example, on Polaris, he's a good commentator. He knows what he's doing, but he's smart about the... He understands the game. He understands all of the jiu-jitsu athletes. He knows who everyone is. Without having someone like that, I think people are going to get upset.
Yeah. Well, like people like Mike Goldberg would get away with it because he has like a massive stat sheet and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And he goes to the stat sheet. But I think grappling's different to MMA. A lot more casual people watch MMA than they watch grappling.
But I've watched so many grappling events though, where the commentator is knowledgeable, but I'm just I can't listen to it. I mean, yeah. We're not going to say what grappling event it was, but we did turn off the commentary and we started playing some real heavy music when we were watching that particular grappling event, which we will not shame. Do you remember to try and make it a bit more intense?
That was actually true. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. yeah, it's pretty bad. But yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
So, you have to find that right balance.
It's difficult. But yeah, I think I'm not sure she was the one. I enjoyed her presence, regardless. I'm all in favour of keeping hashtag keep Tate.
Yeah, she's nice. She's a nice fighter.
Nice woman.
There were no women fights, were there, on Quinta?
No, I don't think there's yet to be a woman's fight.
Pretty bang out of order, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think it's disgusting, actually, and I'm going to be boycotting the next Quintet
until they
get some women on there. That's not true. But you're right, they should get some women's super fights on there. I agree. Yeah, what else happened? Okay, so before my match, Sakuraba came up to me.
Yes. I was going to ask you about this.
Completely unexpected. Apparently, Matt and Ben already knew.
Before the event or before the finals?
No, I was
finals.
Standing in the front of the queue.
It was lined up.
We were lined up ready to walk out. Like,
for the finals?
For the final.
Okay.
So I was at the front of the queue. I was the first one out. And Patrick, who's one of the main guys at Quintet, and the translator there, comes out with Sakuraba and hands me this mask, tells me to put it on. I was like, okay. So I put it on. And he said, Kasushi wants you to wear it out. When you get there, you can throw it into the audience like he does, or you can keep it. So I was like, I can like keep it after the event. And he was like, yeah.
Was this after you stopped crying?
It was. Do you know what it was? I got fucking close, man. It was super emotional.
I'm not surprised.
It was just a fucking surprise. I was really relaxed. I was super calm before I went out there. And then I was nervous. I was nervous.
Mate, you know what happened with me when I met my hero, so I completely understand.
Nick Diaz, when you're in a club.
When I was in a club in Vegas, and my brother saw him, so I ran over drunk, pushing people out the way. And I then dropped to my knees and started bowing to him repeatedly over and over again.
Because you only drank Stella.
Had you had Four Locos, you would have double-legged him.
I completely understand.
They said he gave me the mask and he said I put it on and he said it's nice in there, isn't it? Like Sakuraba said this. He said it makes you more relaxing when you can't see everything going on around you. It kind of almost like blinkers a little bit. But yeah, man, that was super crazy. Mm-hmm. And like that, you know, that's what upset me the most. Was that after that happening, I couldn't get a submission. That was more frustrating for me.
You wanted to honor
it. Yeah, man. You know, how nice would it have been to go out there having been given that honor and then go out and smash through a few people? You know, that would have been the perfect way to honor that gift to me.
Are you like still fucked off about the way your match went? Or
yeah, look, it's a game. This whole thing's a game. It's a team event that has a lot more strategy involved than a normal grappling event does. They played it exactly how we would play it. They played it exactly how we did play it. Mm. When we, it was exactly the same as Quintet 1. When we put Gregor out, against Josh Barnett, not to submit him, but not to get submitted, to take Josh Barnett out, to take the big strong guy out. And that's what they were trying to do against me, the strong beast. They were trying to get the beast off the team, you know. That was the name of the game, and that's what they were trying to do. That so we did that exact same thing, and from our perspective, you know, we played the game well. We won the whole event because of that. Had Greg on, had it been an 8-minute match, had I gone out there, maybe I would have got submitted. Maybe Barnett goes through three people. Maybe we don't win Quintet one. How different everything could have been had Gregor not taken the hit for us. And we put Gregor out there instead of me. It was me, Gregor, and Cole who were going to be the first three people to compete. And the only reason Gregor went out first is because his match was 4 minutes and mine would have been 8. That's the only reason.
So live by the sword.
Exactly. So fuck it. We won an entire event using that strategy. How can you be pissed off with them for doing the exact same strategy to try and get us? So yeah, of course I was pissed. I was as pissed as I imagined Josh Barnett was, that someone went out there to take him to a draw to get him off the team.
Yeah.
But fuck it, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's very... If someone wanted to submit you in 4 minutes, you've got a good match in your hands. If someone just doesn't want to get submitted in 4 minutes, it's very difficult. Very tough.
Mm.
Very tough. What are you going to do?
Do you know what his background was?
Nah, okay. Not really. He's a jiu-jitsu coach at Alpha Male. I know he's a wrestler.
Right, okay.
But what are you going to do? I can't complain. All I can say is I'm pissed that I wasn't able to get the submission. I wasn't able to work it. I think when... I had 4-minute matches before. When I fought Tokoro, he was trying to do the exact same. He was trying to get me off. He was trying to get the 4 minutes. He wasn't trying to submit me. He was trying the last 4 minutes with me. The difference was that I'd already had a match.
The fact that you're, you had to... I asked you this in the last podcast.
Yeah.
But just to wrap my head around it, you went first in the final.
Yeah.
Is that because you have to? Because you didn't fight
to.
In the semis?
I had to. They knew that it was going to be me. I was the only person who could go first.
Right, okay.
They had two people between Mancha and Dustin to go first. So Mancha would have been 8 minutes with me, and Dustin would have been 4 minutes.
So if you didn't fight in the semi, in the first round...
If you don't
round,
fight in the first round, you must fight first.
But you can still mix them in whatever order.
So let's give two examples. One example, that's what happened. Four people competed. I didn't compete. I had to go first. The remaining four, the order can be whatever they want.
Okay, that's
let's say asking. Let's say Craig Jones goes first and submits all five people. We're left with four people who didn't fight. You can mix that order however you want and put Craig on the end.
On the end, yeah. Right, okay, I got ya.
Yeah.
He had some good performances, Craig Jones.
Craig did good. Who did he fight in the second? So in the final.
In the final, he fought that giant wrestler guy.
Yeah, he fought the wrestler. He got given a Shido very quickly. He got given his back and he jumped straight onto his back and got the submission in. And then he was up against Gordon. Now, this was really the most pivotal moment of the entire event. If Craig could take Gordon to a draw, which he was confident he could do, we were going to win, because the only people left was Shaolin versus... I know it. We had two left. Yeah. It was Shaolin and...
Gregor.
Gregor. Just to take out Uriah Faber, which would not have been a problem.
Oh, man.
This is what I'm saying. Small, and it gets crazier, because Craig was 100% confident that he could take Gordon to a draw.
Because he did it in EBI. They had a very close fight
in
EBI.
And he said, when in training, he can't pass his knee shield.
Craig Jones' half guard knee shield?
Yes.
Yeah.
So here's where it all went to shit. He takes him down. Gordon takes him down. Craig goes for a guillotine. So he doesn't keep the knee shield. That's what he said lost in the match. He said, had he not gone for the guillotine attempt, had he instead looked to get a knee shield position, he could have taken him to a draw. Now, we'll never know whether that's the case or not.
No.
But it's crazy to think that the entire... This is the thing with Quintet. There's a butterfly effect. One tiny little thing can affect the entire result of the entire show.
Well, I also think maybe the difference in that match, as opposed to the very close match at EBI, was Craig Jones is very much a leg lock man. Gordon Ryan is. Would you agree that he's a lot more well-rounded? Or?
I would say so, yeah.
And maybe just that the threat of Craig's leg locks... But we're
not talking about EBI. We're not talking about Craig didn't believe that he could... Craig believed that he could draw with Gordon, not based on the EBI performance, but based on the fact that he spent months training with him.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
The issue, though, with the Zed Guard would have been refs.
Cheetos.
Yeah. He would have gotten a lot of flags up for that.
But who knows who would have got the flags? Would Gordon have got the flags? Would Craig have got the flags? It just, you know, there's this... parallel universe, this alternate reality where Craig went for a knee shield and we don't know what the fuck happened in that reality. Whether he would have gotten Gordon out, whether he would have stalled out the 8 minutes. And if that had happened, we would have won. We would have won Quintet 3.
At one point, when Gordon was on Craig's back, the refs gave Gordon a flag.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah.
I can't remember that.
So ridiculous.
So they didn't give a Shido, but the corner refs, when they give flags, that's to indicate to the main ref.
To have a look, yeah.
To have a look.
Wow. He was...
You got a shoot? Yeah. Okay, David's off. David, thank you very much for being here, man. No worries, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
David Wee, that's spelled O-O-I.
He's not just shooting, is he? He's shooting going, quite far away.
You're going back to Singapore.
Shit, this is like an emotional... He's not going down the road, yeah.
An emotional goodbye. Shit, we're just going to do this. Just keep it rolling.
See you later, mate.
See you, man.
See you, brother. Have a good one. When you next back down?
When you
saying, yeah? Probably next year at some point.
Okay, early next year?
Early to mid.
Okay, mate. Have a good one, bro.
Yeah.
Good to see you, mate.
Nice one, brother. Thanks. Give it. You're taking that cord with you. We have a card from Lisa. A prostitute gave us a handwritten business card. saying treat yourself on it. So he's passed it on to me. Something that will stay in my family for generations to come. No doubt. Cool. What were we talking about?
We were talking about Gordon Ryan's match with Craig Jones.
Yeah.
Would you say that... Gordon Ryan was the man of the tournament?
Well, it's hard not to, isn't it? Okay, let's put it this way. Alpha Male team won the tournament in the most stacked team tournament there's ever been of the three. It doesn't even compare. The quality of the first two events combined did not equal the quality of this event. Most stacked tournament, Alpha Male won. Not a single person from Alpha Male submitted anyone apart from Gordon Ryan.
Well, that's what people started to rename it, was Gordon Ryan and his mates.
It was.
He was unbelievable, though.
He was on good form.
I mean, ADCC had a good performance.
Say what you want about him, he was on top form.
Is he the best in the world? Loki?
You could make a very good argument for it. You could make a very good argument. You know, he needs the match. He needs the rematch with Felipe Pena.
Felipe Pena, yeah.
He needs the match because Felipe's... two up on him now. Gordon's had excuses every time, and I'm not saying that. Look,
did he have any? He did.
I guarantee you, he had some excuse for something.
Did Pena win his division at ADCC?
He didn't win his division. I think Yuri Simos won his division.
Right.
But new Gordon's a lot bigger than he was at ADCC.
Yes.
It'll be interesting to see what weight division he does, whether he does under 99 or over 100.
Because he won the under 99, didn't he?
He won 88.
It was 88. 88. He submitted Keenan in the final, wasn't it? With the guillotine.
Correct. So you can make a very good argument that Gordon is the best in the world. What he's going to do next, whether he's going to continue grappling, whether he's going to be looking into the gi jiu-jitsu, whether he wants to get into MMA. He keeps on talking about wanting to get into MMA. Only time will tell.
He wants to win the world championship in the gi, doesn't he, first?
That will be interesting because the talent pool is arguably a lot more competitive in the gi than it is, you know.
Well, I'm a big Keenan fan.
Yeah.
And I thought, I mean, the way that final went, I was a little bit like, oh my, like maybe Craig just, maybe Gordon has his number, just...
That's the only time they competed, right?
No, they had that, hour and a half long footsie match.
Yeah, so I try and delete that from my memory. I'd be interested in seeing Keenan versus Gordon in the gi.
Yeah. I think then the fan in me thinks that Keenan would win that, but yeah.
There's a lot of interesting matches out there for him in the gi.
You know, Gordon's a lot bigger than Keenan now.
He is a lot bigger. You know, we're looking at Muhammad Ali, Herbert Santos.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of interesting matches for Gordon in the gi. I think he'll probably do really well. I don't know whether he'll have as much success in the gi as he's had in no gi, but it will be interesting to see how that goes.
How old is he now? Mid-20s?
24, maybe.
Fucking hell, man.
Young guy, yeah.
He's...
That's impressive, man. There's no doubt about it.
That is incredible.
Say what you want about him. He's a cocky shit or whatever, but
I do.
He's a bit of a douche, but he's good at grappling. He's a good grappler. You can't take that away from him. He's a good grappler.
That was one that I would have loved. If you would have fought Gordon, I would have just...
You know, and I would have...
You would have been the underdog, but I would still just... The fact that you were fighting Gordon, just to think of what would happen.
I would have liked to... Had the opportunity, absolutely, and I'm not saying that I would win. I'm not saying that I would draw. I'd like to think that I'd be able to take him to a decision. But yeah, I'd like to feel what someone that good feels like.
Yeah,
basically, very simply, I'd like to see what that was like. Simple as that.
I mean, the way he dealt with... I know Josh Barnett is older, but the way he just butterfly swept
to sweep someone that big like that was impressive. That's the most that was the most impressive thing that he did.
It looked like you sweeping me.
Yeah,
is what it looked like.
Yeah, just, well, me sweeping you is probably a bit more, but you know, a bit more impressive. But yeah, it was close. A
bit more airtime.
It was close. He probably modelled it on me thinking about it. Yeah, but yeah, they get it on a big guy like that.
In regards to the next quintet, have they disclosed what the plan is next?
I don't know if I can talk about it on here, but okay. I will anyway. The next quintet...
Got the exclusive.
Oh, fuck, I don't actually know if I can talk about it on here. Do you reckon the guys from Polaris listen to my podcast?
Probably.
If they're not listening, then don't anyone tell them. Should we just say that?
Yeah. People are reliable.
They are planning on the next Polaris, which is going to be, I believe it's December 8th in Cardiff, which I'm going to, by the way. I don't know if you want
to go along. Going to in your rash guard or going to in a shirt?
Going in a silk shirt, probably.
Of course. If you don't know, did I speak about your wardrobe before?
I don't know.
One time, Dan didn't tell me that we were going out after training. So I went back to his house and then we were like, all right, we'll go out. So I was like, but I haven't got any clothes. So I think it was your mate was going to lend me his jeans and you were going to lend me a top. So I opened up your wardrobe just to trying to find a normal top. There was a leopard print top. There was some Aztec pattern top. I was like, where's a fucking normal top?
Balinese.
Where's a normal collared top? There fucking wasn't one. There was a silk kimono. Can't wear that. There was a shite shirt.
Yeah, it's a shite shirt. I keep on trying to give you my shite shirt. It's too big for me. It's too small for me.
Mate, just go to like Next or something. Just get a normal top.
Bro, don't tell me how to live.
Okay.
So I'll be going to the next Polaris because it's Cage Warriors the day beforehand. Cage Warriors 100.
Oh, okay,
I'm
going
to go watch Cage.
Are they doing some grappling MMA thing?
It's connected. No, it's not going to be.
Okay.
So Cage Warriors is the day beforehand. I'm going to go Cage Warriors 100, and then I'm going to stay for the next day and go to UFC. Go to Polaris. Polaris are going to be running a quintet, a mini quintet, instead of the undercard, instead of the prelims.
Oh, okay.
On Polaris. So there's going to be four teams, four local teams.
In Cardiff. They're all going to be Welsh teams?
I believe there's a Welsh team, a Brad Pickett team.
What about like a Plymouth team, maybe?
I don't know. There's four teams anyway. But they're going to be running a quintet instead of the prelims for Polaris. This is what I've been told anyway. And then there'll be the Polaris will be after. Well, we'll be continuing on from that. Then just the main card. Most of the matches are going to be the title matches.
Right.
Belt matches. But I won't be competing.
Is anyone defending their belt? Like, is Craig Jones or...
I think they're trying to get Craig Jones on the defend, yeah. And then they need to sort out the... Ash Williams is fighting...
Ryan. From the last one.
And they're trying to get an opponent for Ross because Oliver Taz is injured.
Oh, really?
So he won't be competing for it.
Fair play to Ross as well. Qualified
for ADCC.
Well done.
First British male to qualify since me. 2011.
That was a good time.
So you're a little bit behind me, Ross, but well done. You are, you know, walking in my footprints. Absolutely, I'm very very glad to carve a path for these younger generation. He's a bit older than me.
See, this is the real Dan. This is the one that I like. That should be out all the time.
You bring it out of me.
We just can't help not be a dick when I'm here. Exactly. So if you're not doing Polaris, what's your next plan?
But I have a few little injuries that I need to make sure I'm all good to train around.
potentially fighting Mateus Dinis on November 24th.
Do you have injuries? You were just lifting stones and doing log presses and...
Injuries that aren't affected by the particular exercises that we were doing.
By those full body heavy lifting exercises that we were doing.
It's my thumb, man. It's my thumb and my wrist. Oh, okay. That I've had in there. So the stuff we were doing today didn't hurt.
Okay. Nothing like from the grip that you need for the exercises that we did today.
No. Okay. Different kind. Thick bar hurts. Grappling hurts.
So yeah, recover from those injuries and then what?
Possibly fighting Mateus Dinis.
Mateus Dinis?
Yes. He is the current Kasai champion.
Oh, okay.
Marcelo Garcia guy. He's fighting Gordon Ryan on Kasai in a few weeks' time.
Is he a big dude?
88 kilos. He fought Craig Jones on the last Grapple Fest.
Oh, I think I do know who you mean now, actually.
So we're in the process of making that match potentially happen.
Is there anyone out there that you want to have a match with?
I just want to have some good. I just want to have an exciting match, Luke.
Is this to do with, because obviously you weren't happy with the last one,
Jake Shields?
You really weren't happy with that?
Yeah, I was fucking pissed about that.
Yeah,
it's fucking boring, man. I might even work my cardio a little bit.
Lies.
Yeah, that's a lie.
By cardio, you mean do more than 3 reps of a heavyweight?
3 reps. If you move it fast enough, is cardio.
3 meters if you run fast enough. There's cardio.
Absolute facts, undeniable, undisputable facts.
You genuinely don't run, do you? Don't like to run?
I don't like to run. I've got bad knees, bad back.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I mean, the whole jiu-jitsu community must understand about the bad back problems that people have. And you've actually, because your injury was pretty severe, and it was bad. You're now lifting heavy stones.
Yeah, like I did almost everything we did today with no belt on, and my back was absolutely fine.
Fair play.
But I fixed my back by lifting, by getting stronger.
And you didn't find stuff like yoga or like
no,
stretching and stuff like that didn't help?
No. I just lifted.
See, if I deadlift now or even like a light trap bar.
But don't go into deadlift. I wasn't doing that shit. I'm just going to put the door quickly. I would say within the last 9 months is where I've had a big increase in my recovery of my back, opposed to the previous 5 years. And I believe I put that mainly down to my Dinny Stone training. I started trying to train for the Dinny Stones, which is a partial rep deadlift at an awkward angle. And in doing so, started working a short range deadlift off the floor. I started lifting heavy off the floor, not, you know, relatively light, relatively heavy, but not that heavy. You know, just working my way up very slowly, lifting things a couple of inches from the ground, right? Not from a couple of inches, but just the movement being a couple of inches. And doing that, I found it hit my lower back, but didn't cause any pain.
Right.
So I did it more and more, and then got heavy with that couple of inches range of motion, and then increased the range of motion, and then get back to heavy, and then increase the range of motion and get back to heavy, to the point now where I can pick a 120 kilo bag off of the floor and my back's okay. And I plan on continuing to try and do that. You know, I have goals outside of jiu-jitsu. And to be honest with you, my goals outside of jiu-jitsu are as important to me as my goals inside jiu-jitsu.
Like, the strength, is it that grip one?
The strength stuff.
What was the, you know, when you did...
the red nail?
No, what are you, is it Thorn? You went to do that grip check?
Oh, David Horn?
Is it David Horn?
Yeah.
And you went to that grip thing and you hit a certain level that was one of the highest in the country?
Yeah, I currently hold a world record in this grip event. But that isn't that important to me. Like, there's a few things that are important to me, which is doing the legendary manhood stones in Scotland and in Iceland. The Dinny stones and the Husafell stone are two things that I 100% want to do before I die. And they're very important to me, you know?
You'll pull back, man.
Well, I'm going to make my back strong enough that I can do it.
Okay, man, just be careful.
Man, do you know what?
Is this when you get to 100 kilos?
I guess I can say it now because, like, it's dumb, but, like, I fucked myself up a few weeks before Quintet.
Yeah.
Something real stupid.
Back?
No, my neck.
Really?
Yeah, I hit full Dini Stone weight on my new Dini Stone trainers, and I pinged some sort of tendon in my neck.
Explain what a Dini Stone is.
Dini Stone is basically two massive boulders with ring handles on them. They were used as anchors for horses. So you tie your horse onto this stone with this loop out of it, and your horse wouldn't be able to get away, basically. And they've become these legendary stones that people go to Scotland and they try and lift or try and walk with. Together they weigh 340 kilos, something like that. And you lift them both at the same time. I've been working my way up to doing it. I have these Dini Stone trainers, which are a replica from the right height and the right handle. And 2 weeks before Quintet, I was having a good session. I just got these trainers and I was having a good session, and I thought, fuck it, I'm going to go for full Dini Stone weight. It's 188 kilos on one arm and 144 kilos on the other arm. And just as I broke the floor, something pinged in my neck. And I was super pissed with myself, because just at that moment I clocked, I'm fucking fighting in 2 weeks' time.
Mate, I say it to you all the bloody time.
I know. And you know what? I say it to other people as well. Like, don't get injured doing the thing you're doing to make yourself stronger.
You don't have to do that heavy.
But, okay, so what I regret is doing that 2 weeks before I competed. I don't regret doing it, even if it injured me, because lifting the Dini Stones is as important to me as winning certain jiu-jitsu tournaments.
Really?
Yeah, it is. It is. Like, I don't consider myself, you know, I was like, what inspires me is not pure. Obviously, jiu-jitsu is the most important thing in my life. You know, I say that. That's not true. You know, if you told me, oh, you could lift I could click my fingers and guarantee that you'd lift the Dini Stone and the Husafell Stone, even hold a world record in either of those, or you could be an ADCC champion. It wouldn't take me a second to consider that. You know, that's an obvious choice.
Because you would choose ADCC.
Because I choose ADCC, God, of course. Like, that's a no-brainer. It is a lot more important to me, but at the same time, like, my inspiration is the old-time strongmen who were the Arthur Saxon, the Eugene Sandals, those sort of guys, the George Hackenschmidts. They were professional strongmen, strong people, lifted incredible things, but they were all grapplers as well. They were all wrestlers. Those two, the grappling, the wrestling, and the strongman is entwined through that golden age of strongmen. And that's always been my inspiration for lifting. And also now, I guess, a little bit more my inspiration through the grappling as well. I don't just want to be a grappler. I want to be a grappler who has been one of the 60 something people that have lifted the Dini Stone.
Right.
You know,
I see.
When I die on my tombstone, I don't want it to just say grappler. I don't want it to say,
would it say grappler?
Yeah, for sure.
So you want to say like a great husband, a great father?
No. I'd say ninja warrior, grappler, Dini Stone lifter,
podcaster.
So it's important to me. So I'm planning to go to Scotland next year and attempt to lift the Dini Stones, and I think with more preparation I'll be able to do that. And then either later next year or the year after, I'll go to Iceland and attempt to lift the 185 kilo Husafell Stone.
Jeez. So your grappling is going to take a little, I imagine, in training for that, you're going to wind it down a little bit?
No. That's what I want to do. I want to be able to do all of these things and still compete at the top level of grappling.
You have people who are solely training one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that. There are some people who are just training grappling.
You're the one who talked me out of MMA training to just focus on grappling. You were the one who talked me out of watching Dexter, Sons of Anarchy and Breaking Bad all at the same time and focusing on one TV series. And yet you're doing the opposite now.
Yeah, but I'm not doing another sport, right? My lifting is still going to help my grappling.
That's true, but they are still different.
Because let me tell you, when I can lift 185 kilo stone off the ground and walk it around a goat's pen, wait till I grab onto someone. They'll fucking know.
Has there been a bear hug submission in high level grappling yet?
There will be.
You reckon?
You've got to start whenever you're learning a new technique. You don't try and pull it off on your equals. You try and pull it off on people below you.
This is advice to people when you're trying to learn something. Let's say you're a 80 kilo purple belt, let's say, and you learn a new technique. I'm not talking about you. I know you're okay. I know you're not 80 kilos either, so I'm not talking about you. Let's say you're an 80 kilo purple belt and you learn a new technique. Well, don't try and get it on the 80 kilo purple belts. Try and get it on the 55 kilo female white belt first.
The Velvet Kid special.
Now, when you can get it on her, maybe not the 55 kilo ones, but you try and get it on the 70 kilo white belt.
I don't understand why you had to say female. Surely they would be just as good as the males.
I don't see gender, so it's not a problem. I don't know why you brought
that
up. I
feel like you had to specify that, though. That was quite strange.
That was irrelevant.
Okay.
So try it on the 75 kilo white belt. And when you get it on him, try it on the 80 kilo white belt. Now try it on the 70 kilo blue belt. Try and get it on the 90 kilo blue belt, then to the purple belts. So have I submitted someone with a bear hugging competition? No. But at Louis's wedding, a drunk guy came up to me. His drunk cousin came up to me and wanted to wrestle. Now, he was below a white belt. He'd never trained. And he was highly inebriated.
I'm sure he's had a few combats before.
He might have had a few combat experiences. He was about 65 kilos and had never done jiu-jitsu. And I pulled off the bear hug submission.
It wasn't really a jiu-jitsu move, though, because he was in the air when you were squeezing him. So it was more of a wrestling move.
This is all the same to me.
Right.
Grappling's grappling to me, whether it's standing or on the ground. Very similar to Hercules and the Neiman Lion. The whole legend with that is, as long as the lion was touching the ground, couldn't be killed. So he lifted it off the ground and crushed it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
He wasn't really a lion. He was drunken.
Well, that guy in particular, like I said, you've got to work up
from the drunken 60 kilo bachelor to the Neiman lion.
Exactly. You ever heard the story, Eugene Sandow, old-time strongman, he fought a lion once. Legitimately fought a lion.
Really?
Yep. This was back in the day where, a strongman show, a man performing feats of strength, would sell out arenas before the times of TV and stuff like that. Yeah, man, they brought a fucking lion in, and he fought this lion, and apparently... The story goes...
What, a muzzle on it?
It was muzzled and it was gloved. So they'd taken some of its tools away from it, but it's still a fucking lion.
Still a lion, yeah. Cats don't play games.
They don't play games. So they had a rehearsal the day before.
A rehearsal? Did the lion know it was a rehearsal?
The lion done no shit. So they had a rehearsal the day before, and Sandow fights this lion. He has this absolute fucking war with this lion. And in the end, he manages to defeat it. But he's all fucked up. The claws have got through the gloves and stuff. He's torn the pieces. The next day they come out and he's ready to have another war. He gets into the cage and the lion doesn't want none of it because they've already sorted out that hierarchy.
Right.
So the lion's just in the corner. He doesn't want to fight.
Right.
So he's pulling his tail. He's prodding him. He's trying to get him to do something. Worried that the audience are going to get pissed off because they've come to see Eugene Sandow fight a lion. I believe in the end he put the lion on his shoulders and walked around the stage with it, and that was enough for everyone. They loved it.
Nice. Well, quite similar to the Khabib bear story that was on a chain, probably beaten.
Drugged.
It's pretty deep.
Yeah. I don't agree with animal cruelty.
Talking about the Khabib.
Yeah, man, we'll talk about that quickly.
What was that like after, in Vegas? Was it quite a hostile atmosphere?
No.
No?
I didn't find it that way.
Where did you watch it?
I watched it in a pub in the area.
In the area hotel?
Yeah, called the pub, just outside the area hotel. It was nice. It wasn't super busy. It was tickets only on chairs. So atmosphere was good. We went out afterwards in the area and, man, there were a lot of real upset people.
Irish,
English, Scottish, lots of people.
I found
the people were crying.
Really?
There were people at the bar, came over and just, there were tears in their eyes. They could not believe it. It was crazy.
Well, you saw a lot of videos of fights in the hotel and stuff. I'm sure it was the MGM, but...
Someone got banged out, didn't they?
Yeah, Irish guy got banged out. Knocked. But yeah, I found that when I was in the MGM for the Maidana Mayweather weigh-ins. We were going home the day of the fight. And it was just so hostile, man. There was like Argentinians and Americans just like shouting at each other. And
I'll tell you one funny story. During the Derek Lewis fight, I got a USA chant going.
Did you?
Just randomly at the end of the second round, USA, you whole bar gets going. About 10 minutes later, some redneck from across the room sent me a drink.
Really?
The guy comes over, goes, "What do you want?" He's getting you a drink because you started the USA chant.
I love that.
Mate, Vegas is fucking crazy, man. That's a crazy place.
It is crazy. I love that place. Yeah, I had a bad story with Rafael Lovato.
Go on.
Well, it was the last time he went, it was the World Championships in Vegas. And I saw like Kurt Asiander in the club in Hyde in the Bellagio. That's a sick club, by the way, if you go Vegas again, Hyde. And there were quite a few grapplers in there. And anyways, we're outside. I'm a bit hungover this night, so I just kind of take it easy. By easy, I mean not easy at all. But I saw Rafael Lovato out there, so I asked him for a picture. I had to just double check, because when you see someone in the flesh, you're never sure. Is it that
yeah,
person?
Yeah, yeah. Especially the state that I imagine you were in.
Yeah, terrible. I don't think I said it. Even said it. I was like, Rafael Lovato.
Are you jiu-jitsu man?
Well, listen, this is where the story gets bad. Is I go, Rafael, can I get a picture? He's just really nice, really cool. Fucking massive. Like, big, you don't realise how big he is.
Big dude. He got jacked recently.
Huge. And my mate's about to get his camera out for the photo. And my friend, I'm not going to say his name, that he goes, "Who's this cunt? Who's this cunt then?" And starts pointing at his face.
No.
Do you fight in the UFC or something?
Fucking hell.
I was just like, mate, fucking shut the fuck up. You don't know who this guy is. And all this stuff. And anyways, he then wanted to get in the picture with me and Harvell. And Harvell was like, fucking, I don't want to. I just want to go away. And I could see that he didn't want to be there anymore. So we took the picture. I cut my mate out of it because it was just me and Harvell. And I apologized to him on Insta the next day and he liked it. But like now, all the time, when Rafael fights and there's like a sick picture of him fighting, I'll just send it to my mate and go, "That could have been you." Because I'm just like, look, I can hold Rafael Lovato off for the best part of maybe 2 seconds before he death stares me to the ground, and then he's going to beat you up.
Yeah,
but fucking, I was.
He's definitely on my list of people not to fuck with.
Yeah, no, I was I was actually petrified. It was sobering. I was sober for sure.
Was it as
that.
Scary as when Shandy Ribeiro got mad at us at ADCC?
No, never that scary.
Yeah, that was scary, man.
That was really scary. Yeah. Shandy man. Gave us the death look. We were like, okay, we're all going to go to bed now.
He's a scary. He literally, Shandy Ribeiro sent 7 grown-ass men to bed without supper.
I'm pretty sure when me and Sush went back to the room, Sush is like trying to talk to me quite loudly. And I'm like, shut up.
Shandy might be around.
Shandy might get angry.
Was it? Someone knocked on the door.
You're like, fuck, it's him. He's chasing us upstairs. Yeah, that's a whole nother story, that after party. That was amazing.
Yeah, that after party made the lineup at Quintet look like
ADCC, what year?
ADCC 2011 Nottingham. Rodolfo Vieira's 21st birthday, and every single person that you can imagine who's someone in jiu-jitsu is in the bar getting fucked up.
Honestly, like a dream. Like, you just, this ain't fucking real.
Henzo. Hickson.
Henzo's behind the bar.
Henzo was behind the bar pulling himself pints.
He allowed himself access
Hickson
to behind
Gracie's
the bar.
There. Murillo Bustamante, Torquinho. They're trying to get Torquinho to do shots. Who else was there? Rodolfo Vieira comes in with Monson on his shoulders, dropping him, slips over some beer on the ground and drops him.
Doesn't he then like try to heel hook him?
And everyone's Torquinho.
I remember being shoulder to shoulder with Crone Gracie at the bar.
Crone was there.
And he's asking the guy for a drink, and this poor guy, I mean, he's like 19 years old, probably about 9 stone, soaking wet, like still acne on his face, like, you know, he's just out fucking numbered, outgunned, poor guy. And Cron is like going, he wants a drink, like kept bothering the guy, and this guy just decides to lose it, but goes, "Yeah, just wait." And I was like, oh no. He's gonna go at 19. It's like, you talking to fucking Cron Gracie like that?
There's a kid, mid 20-year-old kid right now walking around Nottingham somewhere. He will never have a clue how lucky he is.
He fucking
to be alive today.
Fair play to him. That's probably one of the worst nights he's ever had of his life, trying to control that.
That was, if I was that hotel, I would have locked the doors and got the fuck out of there and just let the chaos take itself out.
It just wasn't their hotel anymore. Yeah. It wasn't their hotel. For those 24 hours, it was another group's hotel.
Man, talking about bumping into to jiu-jitsu royalty, we went to the UFC PI.
When you were in Vegas?
When I was in Vegas, yeah. We got a tour around there. That's a crazy building, man. It's insane.
It does look pretty unreal.
It's unbelievable. They've got all the offices there as well. It was just the nicest place I've ever been to.
Where is it?
It's in Vegas.
Yeah, where?
Fuck knows.
Down the road
in the desert somewhere. Yeah. I'm fucking there. And we went and saw the actual gym, state of the art gym, all of the equipment, hyperbaric chambers.
Did you use anything?
We were planning to go back there because Ant said that I could, the guy who runs Fight Pass said that I could come and use it whenever I wanted. And we were too fucked up for the remaining couple of days we were in Vegas to take advantage of the situation. So ended up not doing it. But
Vegas will do that to you.
Yeah. But we rolled in there and Jacques Arrière just popped out. He was training there. Forrest Griffin was training there as well. Forrest is one of like the main guys at UFC.
Yeah, I think he kind of runs the ship there.
Yeah, so he was there as well.
He's supposed to be giant, isn't he? Just a giant hairy man?
Absolutely not.
Really?
Nope. Small. He's lost a lot of weight. A lot of weight.
Oh.
A lot of weight. I'd probably put him at 80 kilos.
No, not buying that for a second.
Not big. Trust me.
85 and change at least.
I don't know, man.
Mate, he was a 205er.
Oh, back in the day, don't get me wrong, he was probably walking around at 110 kilos, but he's lost a lot of weight. Maybe put him at 85, 90, yeah. But he was a lot smaller than I expected him to be. And even Ant had said, like, he'd lost a lot of weight. Not fighting anymore. He's not having to carry all that mass.
Anyone else? Him, Jacques Arrière.
We didn't see anyone else whilst we were there, but it was the day before the McGregor fight.
Right.
No, it was the day of the McGregor fight. So it was pretty quiet in the
Bother checking out any other gyms? Like, Drysdale's got a gym out there?
No, I didn't. We didn't bother. I did. We went and trained at affiliate of Shandy's, actually. The Hibero Brothers gym when we all trained, and then I had a private another gym in North Vegas somewhere. But
you went to Jandy's gym?
Not his gym, an affiliate.
Yeah, don't try and act brave. Didn't go to Jandy's gym.
Never, too scared, man. and then we drove into the fucking desert, man. That was crazy.
Yeah, it did look pretty sick. I mean, I'm always hungover in the day, so I go maybe downstairs if I'm being brave.
You should try it sometime.
I can't. I get too much anxiety. There's too many lights and too much noise.
What outside?
Before I leave my room in Vegas, I have to have at least a couple Stellas.
Jesus Christ.
Just to get the blood flowing.
I think you have a drinking problem.
Well, everyone has a drinking problem out there. That's the point of being there.
Mate, it's like, I'm telling you. Okay, if you're not Luke and you go to Vegas, we hired this car. I tried the Harrah Mustang and we got upsold at Hertz. And they put us in this 650 horsepower limited edition Corvette Z turbocharged Z06 something ridiculous 0-60 in 3 seconds. Took the roof off, drove into the coolest name place I've ever heard, the Valley of Fire, because the color of these rocks make at sunset.
That's pretty cool.
We drove in there and just parked up somewhere. Fuck the trails. We're just going to try and climb up these giant fucking mountains and try to scale these mountains. It was awesome, mate. Unbelievable views. Unbelievable.
That sounds like a good idea, trying to climb a mountain in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, fuck it. I'm here talking to you on this podcast.
Join the probably many dead bodies that are out there in that desert.
It went to plan. We did get lost at one point, but then we found some goats and they led us home.
Well, was it like, did you slam the brakes on like you did at Louis' wedding? So we were at Shouty Polaris's guy wedding and we had to go back because I forgot my pocket square. I needed that to complete my suit. I had to complete my suit.
After the ceremony, we went all the way back home to get a pocket square.
Come on, the pocket square was nice. Yeah. And we're driving. I think I'm looking at my phone, so I'm looking down. I'm not even looking at the road. And the fucking brakes slam on. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And I look up and to my left, Dan's just staring out the window. So I look and there's a bunch of ponies. So like, Dan, what are you doing? Oh, come on, mate, it's nice. We need to get back to the wedding.
Mate, look, anytime, if your life is so busy that you can't stop the car to say hello to a few ponies, then you need to have a good holiday.
They were nice ponies, I'm not gonna lie.
Thank you very much. And a story to tell as well. We got another 5 or 10 minutes. I've got to shoot off. I've got a seminar now. I've got a seminar in a little bit.
When does your seminar tour finish?
I don't know, man.
It's been a long tour, is it?
I think I'm like 40 something seminars in. I've got more. It finishes middle of November, but I have a waiting list of 10 gyms for next year. But I'm not going to do another tour next year.
You're not?
No.
Why? Do you not like money?
I do like money, but I like time as well.
Yeah.
I like freedom. So I haven't been able to compete much in the last 2 years because almost every single one of my weekends is taken up by doing seminars. So I'm planning to train more, to compete more next year, get some other projects going. I'll still be doing some seminars, but they'll be individual. Like, I'm going to finish the waiting list that I have in the first couple of months, January, February, March time. And then on from that, I'll still do a couple of seminars here and there. I want to try and run a camp. Is the big thing. I wanted to do it last year.
Well, like a summer camp?
Yeah, just in the UK to begin with, a couple of days, instead of me traveling to 50 gyms, get 50, 100 people to come to me somewhere nice where we can do some jiu-jitsu, we can play some Mario Kart, we can throw some axes, record a podcast.
Have a couple of Stellas.
Good lad. Grab some Four Locos.
No, not doing that.
Have a good time. So I'm planning to do one of those next year. I think I've been to a few camps and, you know, I think the main one is a lot of people focus too much on the jiu-jitsu.
It's just, you got to go there to enjoy yourself.
You've got to go there to have a good time.
Yeah.
I think I can give people a good time. So that'll be the plan. But we'll see how that goes anyway.
Just don't look at me in the eye when you say that.
I'm looking you dead in the eye.
You were. I was getting, I had to look away then, a bit frightened.
I can give people a real good time.
Were you, obviously with your schedule, Quintet fell on ADCC trials?
Yeah, it was the day before ADCC trials, so I wasn't able to compete. You know, that was my main goal after watching the 2017 ADCC, is that I wanted to qualify for 2019. So I've got one more opportunity. I'll go to the second European trials. I believe it will be around about March next year. I'm not sure exactly. That's just a guess. But I imagine the first half of next year we'll have the second European trials. I'll be there 100% and trying to get my place on the main stage.
Where are those trials? Do you know?
I don't know.
Do you know where the ADCC is being held?
California.
Oh.
Is that bad?
Well, it's just expensive, isn't it? Like, if it was somewhere in Europe, somewhere I could go and watch.
You also get a trip to Los Angeles, mate.
That's true, but that's dollar.
This guy has been to Vegas how many times in the last 5 years? So strange.
It's created the debt, though. If it lands the same time I'm out in Vegas, I may do the four-hour drive.
Listen, you know, grab a Corvette, mate. It's worth it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the main grappling goal is to get to ADCC next year, and hopefully there's some stones as well whilst I'm at it.
Let's maybe just focus on one thing.
Mate, I got this shit.
go to California for ADC and stones.
We'll do a ADCC / Husafell stone success rundown after the ADCC. And I can remind you of this conversation.
If you get into the ADCC again, obviously because you were so young when you went at it first time.
I was 20, yeah.
And a lot lighter. What were you?
75 kilos.
It's weird when I see that
picture.
Stuart Cooper highlight reel.
Yeah. And that's not me.
The jumping in the air.
Yeah, it's not me. That's someone else. That's a previous incarnation of the Raspberry Ape. That isn't me.
It did look like you. It looked like the same guy we had straight after the fight of Calisans was in the dive bar doing shots of everything because you were so depressed.
Well, that sounds like something I might still do, but it's a different version of me for sure.
Okay, yeah. That was the old you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you were, you know, young and dumb.
7 years ago, mate. Can you believe it?
Long time ago, mate.
Wow.
Well, you had the whole army. You had the old ape army out.
Yeah.
I guess they're still part of it.
Still a few members, yeah.
Andrew Marshall went as an actual ape.
Yeah. That guy, he went in, he fully committed to that. And then a minute later had to slowly walk of shame back up the stairs in his Raspberry Ape t-shirt with his gorilla suit on.
Always feel bad for that.
It was, but it was good.
It was a good time, but yeah.
A lot of stars. I still never got that autograph from Fabrizio Verdun.
We'll get it, mate. Don't worry. he just said no, didn't he?
He would have let, no, that's the thing. You know, just a simple, I've got to go. I wouldn't have minded that. He's a busy guy.
What did he say? He said, wait there, I'll be back.
He gave me the 1 minute sign. So I waited.
He's still waiting.
And waited. And also, I'm slightly drunk, so then I'm starting to, like, the alcohol's starting to wear off now, and I'm still waiting. Still got my pen and paper in hand. Lad's like, come on, Luke, let's go. Nah, Fabrizio's coming back. It's all right, guys. Go on without me. I may have just forged his autograph and then just took it. See, he told you I'd get it.
I'm going to get you. Before my time is up, I'm going to get you Fabrizio Verdun's autograph.
I don't know if it'd be right if I got it now.
No, it does. You're going to put an end to that story.
He probably remembers me from that.
You're going to put an end to that story.
Put me out of my misery.
Anyway, dude, I got a shoot. I got to go teach a seminar.
Yes, mate. I've got a couple of Stellas to drink tonight. It's,
of course you do.
Brother's Saturday girlfriend's 21st.
Yeah. The beginning of many celebrations, I imagine.
Dan think you only have one chance to celebrate a birthday.
Whereas Luke celebrates every single possible occasion for 3 weeks solid.
My family have a family birthday, and then a party, and then a close friend's birthday. And I think that's
And then
it.
An acquaintance gathering, and then a quinceañero.
But yeah, no, it's been a good day, man. It's been a good day.
It's been a good day, man. We lifted some stuff and we had a chat. Luke Dalmido at Pigeon Pecker MMA.
At Pigeon Pecker MMA, please try and break my low.
We'll get you up past 500.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, it's going to happen, I promise.
I'm going to catch up to you. You're a few thousand ahead of me.
Yeah, a few.
About 10 and a bit.
Yeah, and a bit.
And change.
I'm getting there. Change. Nice one, brother.
Thanks for having me on, mate.
Awesome, always. That is it. I hope you guys enjoyed that. If you want to watch Quintet, it is still up on demand on UFC Fight Pass, and I believe they have now released the entire first round between Polaris team and 10th Planet team for free on YouTube as well. So if you haven't seen that, go and watch it for free. Super exciting stuff. If you want to contact the podcast, you can email me, which is podcast@rosrape.com. You can check out this podcast. We're on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud. Go leave me a review on iTunes if you have iTunes. That's always nice. Also on YouTube, youtube.com/rosrape. The video from this podcast and many of the other podcasts now are all up on there. You can follow me on Instagram mainly, Twitter as well, if you are that way inclined, @raspberry_ape. You can also check out Luke's Instagram, which is @pigeonpeckermma, and David's Instagram, which is @davidwee00ibjj. Yeah, that's it. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and I will catch you next time. Take it easy.